It's only for the summer, and a lot of the lads are staying. In fact, it's mainly the apprentices that are going, and you said yourself it'd be good experience.
Vitola looked wretched, and in the chilly air of the half-finished theatre, a good deal smaller than usual, like a balloon 2 weeks after the party. He prodded some wood shavings distractedly with his stick.
"We grow old, Master Howell. At least," he corrected himself, "I grow old, and you grow older. We have heard the gongs at midnight."
"Aye, you don't want him to go, do you?"
"I was all for it at first, you know. Then I thought, there's destiny afoot. Just when things are going well, there's always bloody destiny. I mean, that's where he came from, somewhere up in the mountains. Now fate is calling him back. I shan't see him again."
"It's only for the summer."
Vitola held up a hand.
"Don't interrupt. I'd got the right dramatic flow there."
"Sorry."
Flick, flick, went the stick on the wood shavings, knocking them into the air.
"I mean, you know he's not my flesh and blood."
"He's your son, though," said Howell. "This hereditary business isn't all it's cracked up to be."
"It's fine of you to say that."
"I mean it. Look at me. I wasn't supposed to be writing plays. Dwarfs aren't even supposed to be able to read. I shouldn't worry too much about destiny if I was you. I was destined to be a miner. Destiny gets it wrong half the time."
"But you said he looks like the fool person. I can't see it myself, mark you."
"The light's got to be right."
"Could be some destiny at work there."
Howell shrugged. Destiny was funny stuff, he knew. You couldn't trust it. Often you couldn't even see it. Just when you knew you had it cornered, it turned out to be something else. Coincidence, maybe, or providence. You barred the door against it, and it was standing behind you. Then just when you thought you had it nailed down, it walked away with a hammer. He used destiny a lot. As a tool for his plays, it was even better than a ghost. There was nothing like a bit of destiny to get the old plot rolling. But it was a mistake to think you could spot the shape of it, and as for thinking it could be controlled. Granny Weatherwax squinted irritably into Nanny Ogg's crystal ball. It wasn't a particularly good one, being a greenish glass fishing float brought back from Fawn seaside parts by one of her sons. It distorted everything, including, she suspected, the truth.
"He's definitely on his way," she said at last. "In a cart."
"A furry white charger would have been favourite," said Nanny Ogg. "You know, caparisoned and that."
"Has he got a magic sword?" said McGrath, craning to see. Granny Weatherwax sat back.
"You're a disgrace, the pair of you," she said. "I don't know. Magic chargers, fiery swords, ogling away like a couple of milkmaids."
"A magic sword is important," said McGrath. "You've got to have one."
"We could make him one," she added wistfully, "out of thunderbolt iron. I've got a spell for that. You take some thunderbolt iron," she said uncertainly, "and then you make a sword out of it."
"I can't be having with that old stuff," said Granny. "You can wait days for the damn things to hit, and then they nearly take your arm off."
"And a strawberry birthmark," said Nanny Ogg, ignoring the interruption.
The other two looked at her expectantly.
"A strawberry birthmark," she repeated. "It's one of those things you've got to have if you're a prince coming to claim your kingdom. That's so everyone will know. Of course, I don't know how they know it's strawberry."
"Can't abide strawberries,"
said Granny vaguely, quizzing the crystal again. In its cracked green depths, smelling of bygone lobsters, a minute Tom John kissed his parents, shook hands or hugged the rest of the company, and climbed aboard the leading Lattie. "It must have worked," she told herself, "else he wouldn't be coming here, would he? All those